Blog Talk Radio.
Another great show here. We have the Suspense Radio. Today is going to be the all-lady show, and we are going to kick it off with author Carla Neggers, followed by Sandra Brannon, and then Janice Gable Bassman will finish it off. 90 minutes here. Three fantastic authors. I'm your host, John Robb. I want to thank you all for joining us however, wherever, and whenever you listen to the show. Of course, everything is available on demand. Go to suspenseradio.com for a lot more information. And you'll, or suspensemagazine.com for a lot more information. You'll be able to see everything that goes on and all the shows we got going coming up. But now, 90 minutes of Suspense Radio starts now.
Welcome to my nightmare. I think you're gonna like it. I think you're gonna feel you belong.
Welcome back again, everybody. We are off and running, and we want to welcome our first guest onto the show. Her latest book is called Harbor Island. It is the latest in her Sharp and Donovan series, and we want to welcome Carla Neggers to the show. So, Carla, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's so great to be able to talk with you. We've met before, I believe, at Thriller Fest, and now we're able to kind of finally get you on the radio show to talk about your great series, Sharp and Donovan, and your latest book, Harbor Island, which, you know, you say, which, of course, is a journey that takes from Boston to Ireland back to Maine. So you're taking people all around the world here. Give us a little bit about Harbor Island, kind of in your words, the behind-the-scenes look into it.
All right. Awesome. Well, Harbor Island features my two FBI agents, Emma Sharp, who's an art crimes expert and comes from a family, the Sharp family of art detectives. Her grandfather is a museum guard turned world-renowned art detective. And Colin Donovan, who's a deep cover agent, and he comes from a family of lobstermen and cops in Maine. They actually grew up just a short distance from each other in southern Maine, but worlds apart because of their just completely different backgrounds. And so in Harbor Island, Emma and Colin, it's a few months after they have kind of gotten together over very intense circumstances. The series starts with them meeting in Saints Gate. And now Harbor Island is the fourth book. Now, you don't have to read them in order, but some people like to do that. And they're just back from Ireland. That was supposed to be this, you know, a break. And it was a break for a couple of weeks. But then, of course, they got caught up in a disappearance and the murder. And that's features in Declan's Cross. But now they're back in Boston, which is where their FBI unit, it's a special team, is based in Boston. And everything's supposed to be going back to normal, except it doesn't. So, no, I mean, they're not even recovered from jet lag when Emma goes and to this little harbor island, hence the title, Harbor Island, in Boston Harbor, and finds a woman, the woman who called her to come meet her, has just been shot dead, and in her palm is this little Celtic cross, which is a symbol of this elusive art thief that the Sharp family and the FBI have been chasing for the last 10 years. And so now it's like, has the thief suddenly turned violent. Who is this woman? Why Emma? Why, you know, how did they get to call her? And off we go from there.
And the one thing also that you've included here in, you know, in all the books is you have a prequel book, a story called Rock Point, which is like a prequel that you list, which kind of goes more, a little bit more in depth. What exactly is that
you
kind of put into the book?
Point, yeah, you know, it's really exciting. I know as a reader myself, I love getting extras when I buy a book. And in this case, in Harbor Island and in the paperback of Declan's Cross, we have Rock Point. And that is the story of Finian Bracken, actually, and how he ends up in Rock Point, Maine, which is the little fishing village, a struggling fishing village where Colin Donovan is from. And Finian plays an important role in each of the books in the Sharp and Donovan series. He's an Irish priest with a little bit of a mysterious and tragic background, definitely tragic. He was married and had two daughters who were killed in a sailing accident, and he and his brother were starting this thriving whiskey distillery, and he ended up going into the priesthood and now is serving this little parish in Maine for a year, but he's become friends with Colin and with Emma Sharp, who is also an ex-nun. I mean, she never took her final vows, but she was a novice. So there's all this complexity of character in there. But Rock Point has this, it's his story of how he ended up in Maine. And so there's some smugglers, and there's an Irish detective in there, Sean Murphy, who also plays a role in Declan's Cross, you know, back when Colin mm-hmm. and Emma were supposed to be taking a break, and they end up in this murder investigation. And then in Harbor Island, now Colin and Emma are back in Boston, and they discover this woman who has you know, died and been shot, and where's the shooter and what happened. So you have all this mystery going on, and we have the cross. Well, the symbol of this thief who's hit major cities all over the world for the last 10 years, and none of the art has ever been recovered, and you know, who is this thief? Well, Colin and Emma's boss, Matt Yankowski, has... He's in Ireland. He's in Dublin. And his wife has turned up missing. So he can't find his wife. And they've been estranged, so he doesn't know if she's, you know, gone back to Paris to buy scarves or something. He has no idea what's going on with her. And so he's in Dublin trying to figure that out. And things get very complicated for him. And so does Sean Murphy, this Irish detective, also plays a role in that. Well, Sean and Finian Bracken are really good friends. So we see that in Rock Point. See how all these little threads connect
it's like all these webs that kind of come together, and then they form the web. So you got all these strings coming together to form the web, and you know, that's what you've been able to do, is to kind of piece all these things together, and then you're taking the reader on these different roads and these journeys, but they kind of all might lead to the same point. It's just a matter of how they all get there.
Exactly. That's a great way to think of that. Yeah, the web. And it's good because I was cleaning my office this morning, and, you know, it's autumn. I live in New England on a hilltop in Vermont, and the spiders are kind of coming in, and it does make writing interesting, you know. But we have – so.
But
so
you know what?
Finian,
but it's good to have company. It's good to have company.
Yeah, it's good
to-
Yeah, that's what I think, you know, as a spider goes crawling up my leg. Yeah, it's good company.
Right.
But it does take you out of the book. But the idea of the web and the connections is really, it's something that as a writer and storyteller and also as a reader that I just love to get into. And Finian Bracken actually plays a role in Harbor Island because, you know, so we have this dead woman. Well, who happens to be in Boston, but an Irish artist who knew Finian Bracken from way back, and so there's this connection, and then it's like, well, okay, why is she there when this woman is killed with this cross, and this the Irish artist Aoife, Also, her uncle is the one who owned the art that the thief stole in his first caper. So it all ties together. And again, you know, you can get some of the background in Declan's Cross, and then Harbor Island, we go and do more. But do you have to read Declan's Cross to know what's going on in Harbor Island? You don't. I know this because readers have told me. But but certainly they do, the stories do connect, definitely.
And I want to remind everybody here that we are speaking with author Colin Neggers, and you can go to colinneggers.com, NEGGERS.com, for, of course, a lot more information about the book Harbor Island, which is the latest, like we said, in the Sharp and Donovan series, along with the entire series. You can check it out. The book came out on August 26th, and the one thing that, you know, the questions that I kind of wrap around is everything is changing, and social media makes everything changing. I mean, if you just look, I mean, we can just take the sports for an instance and how everything has changed with the Ray Rice and all that stuff going on. So everything is instantaneous. So now when the book came out August 26th, you're able to go on Facebook and Twitter and these different places, and you're able to see how fans and readers are reacting to your book instantly, where before in the past that never happened. Do you check those things out? Do you look at them? I mean, how do you kind of handle that instant feedback that you receive right when the book's released?
Oh, you know, that's a very interesting question, because I do, you know, I don't have a set formula, but I do think it's very easy for writers to just get caught up in it and constantly check Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, and see who's saying what. You know, but I do like to interact with readers, so I'm on Facebook. I have a Facebook page. I'm there just about every day, checking and asking questions and engaging with readers. So I love to do that, and a lot of the readers there have been just so, you know, just so enthusiastic about my writing in general, and then now with the Harbor Island out. So that's very rewarding. And then, you know, just checking, you can, you know, all the other places, I try to discipline myself to not do that.
Right.
Every 10 minutes or every day, because, you know, I'm writing another book. I'm actually writing Keeper's Reach, which is the next book in the Sharp and Donovan series. And Harbor Island at this, you know, it's done. And so,
right.
You know, there you can't go back and change anything, and you hope readers enjoy it. And so far, I mean, readers have been very, very enthusiastic about the book, so I'm really happy about that. But all of that, you know, that whole question, because I think, you know, when I'm writing the book, like I'm writing Keeper's Reach now, it's mine. I'm doing my thing with it. I'm doing the very best I can to tell the story that's in my head and to get that onto the page and then to go from there. But once it's done, then readers come to it, then they have their own relationship with the story. And I know I'm such an avid reader myself, and I have found, you know, I love to discover a new author. I've discovered many several books into a series, and then I go back and start from the beginning and read the whole series, and if they have another series, I'll find that series and just keep reading. I mean, I can go back on so many authors that I've done that with. And then, but sometimes I'll read a book, and any book, I think that's true for any of us as readers, and you can just read it and you go, I'm just not in the mood for this right now, and I put it aside and I come back to it and I go, oh, I love it, you know, because
right.
I just had to be in the right place. I did that this summer. We've done a lot of traveling, and sometimes when I'm traveling, certain books just are just what I want to grab, and other books, it's like, no, I got to be home by, you know, in my Adirondack chair in the shade or sitting by the wood stove on those colder days and just kind of curled up and reading. It's different. I don't know. And
right.
I mean, I hear that with readers too, that it just depends.
Now, the other thing, when readers go onto your site, and again, colinneggers.com, you go on your site, they're going to see something when they look that you have, you know, five different series besides Sharp and Donovan that you have going on, and things that you have written. You have, you know, Sift River Valley series, you have Black Falls, Boston Police. So you have all these different series. Now, my question is, when you decide, hey, you know what, this is a great thing that I want to write about, this is a great idea, plot, whatever, how do you kind of decide which characters are going to be the best ones to tell the story within the series that you have going on. So, for instance, why Harbor Island, is it perfect for Sharp and Donovan and not somebody else?
Oh, because of the characters primarily and the setting. But Emma Sharp and Colin Donovan are just, I mean, this is the first time that I've done a series with two main characters that recur as opposed to different main characters with every book. And so they, and Colin and Emma have a relationship. So when Harbor Island starts, they're actually got engaged at the end of Declan's Cross. Little spoiler, but you can read.
Engaged,
I mean, you know,
though.
You know that in the first page.
But as for a thriller writer and for a suspense reader, engaged doesn't mean married. Shit can always go wrong. So you just never know.
Well,
you're
and they haven't told. They haven't told anybody, and yeah, you know, it was
right.
A Dublin pub, and it was a rainy night. And it's like, is this real? And their relationship has been so intense, and mm-hmm. So it just is. It's just seemed right when I could see Emma going off a little bit against the rules to meet this woman, and the collision of her background as a sharp with this complicated family and her grandfather who, you know, not necessarily is everything of his 60 years as an art detective. Not everything's in the files. You know, what's in mm-hmm. his head? What secrets does he have? And so that collision between that life and her life as an FBI agent, and then you throw in Colin Donovan, who is a very intuitive, gut reaction kind of guy, and undercover, and then so here she's going off by herself and doesn't say anything to this little Harbor Island and discovers a dead woman. So not only do you have the whole suspense plot and the mystery mm-hmm. surrounding who this woman is, but we also have the tension that puts on Emma and Colin's relationship and on them individually. So to me, that's all enriches the stuff, the whole story, but it also helps. That's why it's Harbor Island and it's Emma and Colin rather than the other ongoing series right now would be the Swift River Valley series, and that's more contemporary romance. And it always mm-hmm. there's a puzzle in the stories, but I just finished Echo Lake, which is the next book in that series, and the characters there, it's like, you know, it's just different, and it's a different world. And even though it's still New England, it's a small town west of Boston, kind of where I grew up on the edge of the Quabbin Reservoir, which was created when in the 1930s when these four little towns were wiped off the map and the valley flooded to create this reservoir with drinking water for Boston. So there's this little, it's like a little town where time feels like it stopped, and classic New England. So that's a fun series and to write and those characters. So that world I've created when the story and the characters kind of, it just feels like, yes, that's where they belong. That's where they belong.
Yeah. I mean, and I always find it interesting because authors that do have multiple series, you kind of have to, I mean, you have to change your way of thinking, and the writing is kind of different because the characters all have different voices. So what does, you know, what is your biggest challenge when you're sitting down and, like, when you write Harbor Island and maybe you've just written another book, but now you have to change your mode and change your way and to get into this book? What was your biggest challenge when you were writing Harbor Island?
Oh, very good question. The biggest challenge for that story was just, for me, really, I mean, just as a writer, nuts and bolts, was to try to make sure that from page one, readers would know what's going on, especially new readers to the series. So we have, because this, the symbol of this art thief, that it's right there in this, you know, very early on in the story, this Celtic cross and stuff, that starts in Declan's Cross. And so mm-hmm. if you're reading this book if you're reading Harbor Island for the first time, you've never read one of my books, and here you are diving in, I wanted to make sure that the reader would would be clued in and wouldn't have to read Declan's Cross, but would want to by the end of the story. So that's a bit of a technical challenge. And then, but most of the stuff, I mean, I'm one of those writers who loves to write. I have a great time with it. I do a lot of revising and thinking about a book. So I let it percolate before I sit down to write. So with Keeper's Reach, which I'm writing now, I wrote the outline, months ago. And it's not an outline, it's jumping off point. I mean, when I say an outline, it's like, a page and a half. Just to kind of get the story percolating, and for me, writing it down is what really helps to anchor it. Otherwise, it's all over the place. And so I that helps me as a writer. And if I know who the characters are and what makes them tick, that also makes everything just. You know, I've never had a book write itself. I've tried. I sat down and I said, "Book, write thyself."
That'd be nice.
But I love the process. I love the process.
Well, maybe you can get some of the spiders to help you type, so that way when you're busy, they can do something else and help you out. Just a thought. No, you go to these conventions and you hear different authors, and they all say different things, whether they're teaching classes and craft fests and things like that. And the one debate that, you hear is, outline to organic writing. And, some people are like, I have to outline. I got to outline so I know what I'm doing. Other people are like, I don't outline. I just start writing. And then the story just kind of comes to me. Which kind of the side of the fence are you on? It sounds like that you might outline just a little bit, but does the story surprise you as you go along? And like, wow, I didn't know that was going to happen.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm a both and neither. I don't just sit down and start on page one and keep going and get to the end and that's it. And I don't think about it ahead of time or anything like that. That's not how I write. But I also don't outline every little jot and tittle. Mm-hmm. I just don't. So for me, it's the synopsis, the idea. I start playing with that. It's like a little seed, and everything's in there. I think it's in there, but I don't know what it is. I don't know. And so I get writing. But a lot of times it's the actual process of writing that helps the characters in the story gel. I don't sit down and do character dossiers. I might play with that kind of stuff, like after I've written 75 or 100 pages and come back and say, okay, do I have a fully fleshed out character here? It's like kind of going, if you think of the craft and that real, the editing and the thinking and that, all that was at that left brain kind of stuff. And then the right brain, the inspiration and just playing and having a great time. I kind of go back and forth between the, just when the moment is right. So I rely a lot on my gut as a writer to figure those things out. But like with Harbor Island, I knew for sure that this woman was going to be found dead and Emma was going to be alone, and it was going to be on a little harbor island in Boston Harbor, and it related somehow or another to this art thief. Beyond that, I didn't have much. I write and I come back and I look around and I say, okay, where am I as a writer? So when you think about that, that's a little bit of both. And I will go in and do outline, like after I've written, say, 7,500 pages, then I'll stop and I'll go, okay, I better write.
7,500 pages or 7,500 words?
75 to 100 pages.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Somewhere right around
pages.
That. Yes.
I was
Oh my God.
Damn,
I'm starting to sweat now. Yeah.
I was like,
that sounds
like
although I do
like, that
throw out
like
a lot.
Supreme Court briefing.
That was scary. So, can you imagine all you have to throw out? Although there's some books
really?
Like, where, that you just end up
some.
That, that as
some,
I'm writing, I just...
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
you know, to get... 250-page
books like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes you have to write 7,500 pages to get the right 250, right? Whew.
Yeah, well, like I said, I mean, but then again, there's some 250-page books that feel like they were 7,500 pages, and that's a thing of good thing.
Yeah, you know, that can happen too. You know, when I'm writing and things, it's just like it's just not going anywhere, and then I just put it aside, go for a long walk, come back, figure it out.
Well, we got about a minute left here, so what I want to do is I want to kind of give you the last minute to kind of let everybody know, maybe, you know, where you're at, where you can be found, all the kind of fun stuff that you want to kind of let everybody know what's going on. So it's all on you.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It's been fun.
It
has. Best way to reach me is carlaneggers.com. I do a regular e-newsletter. It's around once a month, and I love to hear from readers. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, so join me anytime. We have a lot of fun.
Well, Carla, again, we want to thank you so much for coming on. Very excited to see the latest book, Harbor Island, that you have out here, the latest in your series. That, you know, Sharp and Donovan series. So, again, we want to thank you for coming on. Wish you nothing but the best. Can't wait to see what you got coming on in the future.
All right. Thanks so much. See you at Thriller Fest.
All right. Bye-bye. So, again, everybody, that is author Carla Neggers, and her latest book is called Harbor Island. You can check her out, carlaneggers.com, for a lot more information about what she's got going on. Also, you can check out brash-books.com. For more information on the stuff that they have going on, it is a new publishing company, and they say they publish the best crime novels in existence, so you've got to make sure that you don't miss that. That is brash-books.com. What else we got coming up here is, I don't know if you have heard, but we got some exciting authors in the latest magazine, and that's going to be coming out soon, but also... We have an exciting author that The Shield rocks on all cylinders, says James Rollins. And that is Scholes and Moore. Because what if Einstein got it wrong? You got to pick up The Shield by Scholes and Moore. You can go to scholesmoore.com for more information. It's from the international best-selling authors of The Phoenix Apostles and The Grail Conspiracy. We are going to now take a short little break. We're going to be back with our next guest, Sandra Brannon. She's going to be a hoot, everybody, so don't miss out because her latest book is called Solomon's Whisper, but we ain't going to be quiet. So in the meantime, you can listen to this.
Bag of bones, I'm just a bag of bones. Must be some kind of
homecoming song.
Welcome back, everybody, here after the break. We once again thank Carla Negers for joining us on the show to talk about her book, Harbor Island. But now we're going to be switching gears and talking not only with a great author, but a friend of ours that we have now had over the years. And it's been great to have a great friendship with her. We met her a couple, two, 3 years ago in Thriller Fest, and it's been fabulous. Her name is Sandra Brannan. Her series is the Liv Bergman Mystery Series. The latest book, which is book five, is called Solomon's Whisper. So we want to welcome Sandra to the show. Sandra, thanks so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me, John. I'm so excited to be here and can't wait to learn all about your audience.
Well, my audience is crazy, just like me, and that's good because crazy reads. And, you know, love to read books. We love to get into the suspense, the thriller, the mystery, the horror, everything it is. And the one thing that always captures them is, you know, great characters. And that's something that you've been able to do now here for five books. Of course, you know, we met you back, and I believe it was one of the first ones that you came out. One of your first books, I think, that we had listed as one of the best of, in our best of issue. And now that you're on book five, it's great to kind of see how you've progressed this series through. So give us a little bit about Solomon's Whisper and how everything's kind of progressed now up to book five.
I would be happy to. I was excited to meet you because you and Shannon were the kindest people when I got out there. I'm a South Dakotan, so when you get out to New York City and you're a debut author, you know, it's kind of frightening because it moves at a totally different pace as it does here in South Dakota. But you guys were friendly and welcoming and, you know, took me by the hand, and I felt like I was just part of the family then, and that was fun for me. And since then, it's just been such a wonderful ride for me. Solomon's Whisper, the one that just released, is out in ebook only at this moment. But I'm so excited about the virtual tours and the reviews I've had because they're people who have never read my series before, and they're picking this up and they're saying, "Oh my gosh, this is a great standalone. Now I want to go back and read the rest of the series." So you know, I wasn't intending for that, but I was really happy that you didn't have to read the other four to get what was going on there. So just a sneak preview, not to ruin anything, but this is kind of the book that my loyal fans have been waiting for. This is Liv Bergman had started out, as you might remember, as an amateur sleuth in the mining business, and she just kept getting drugged into solving mysteries. But by Solomon's Whisper, she's actually in the FBI, and she actually is solving a mystery. Many mysteries. It's several cold cases. Streeter Pierce, one of her mentors, has given her a cold case to keep her in the FBI of her niece. So that they don't do that in the FBI, obviously, but I tried to make that storyline work, and people are just loving that book. That's actually gotten the best reviews so far of any book I've published yet. So I'm so excited about it, John. I because of people like you, and you and Shannon are similar to me, I think, in a lot of ways, because I like to learn, and I don't ever consider myself, you know, I still go to Thriller Fest and sign up for Mastercraft and learn from the greats, because even if you've done well in your series or done well in your career, you can always learn something new from someone else. And so I'm still a student, and my goal, and it's worked, every single one of my books has gotten better and better and better ratings from the reviewers on Goodreads and Amazon and from the newspapers and the magazines, and that's what you want. You don't want to go, this isn't as good as her other ones. You know, that I never wanted that. So thanks to Suspense Magazine, even the last one, Noah's Rainy Day, made the best of suspense list for 2013, and I have to tell you, that was such a kick in my sales. That was so fabulous for me. I got so many new readers from that. So thank you. That was just, it was huge for me.
So now for people that are just finding out about Liv Bergen and your series and kind of, you know, now people are like, oh, you know, you're in book five, you know, what's kind of, you know, happened? So In the Belly of Jonah was the first book, and then you went to Let's Return to Sodom. And so and when people look at the covers, I mean, they're really, I mean, it's like, wow. I mean, they really jump out at you, and so people are trying to understand, okay, is this kind of like a thriller horror? Is this kind of like a suspense? What would you kind of label kind of as the series for new readers that are just going to find out about you?
Yes, and that's a great point. They're called the Liv Bergen Mysteries, but I wouldn't call them. Yes, there's some mystery to it, but I agree with you. They're not in the horror genre at all, because I don't describe the scenes well enough, like all of our wonderful horror writers that are out there. Mine are more gritty suspense. They're probably more like a, I'd say they're more thriller than they are mystery. But in some cases, I think what's magic about having five in the series and why they keep going strong is not one book is the same. It isn't formulaic at all. The first one was more of a thriller where you got to see it from the killer's viewpoint and Liv Bergen's viewpoint, whereas the second one, it was more of a mystery on whodunit. And that was Lot's Return to Sodom, which was based in the Sturgis motorcycle rally. And what I like about that, the third one, I took it back to almost a historical fiction, and it went back into the time of how the West was settled and the gold rush in the Black Hills of South Dakota, but made it a modern mystery. And it was nothing like the first two. And, of course, the fourth one that you was so generously put on the Suspense magazine top suspense list was Noah's Rainy Day, was from his viewpoint as somebody with severe cerebral palsy who knew where a kid who had been kidnapped was being kept, but he couldn't say anything because he didn't know how to speak. And so I try to take in elements of every single one of my books that's brand new to the reader, and it's so strange for me that it's worked very well. They love the characters, but I don't write character fiction. It's more plot-based. And I'm amazed at how when I go across the country, I am blessed with so many book clubs who invite me in either telephonically or personally or by Skype. But it's fun to have the book clubber say, that's me, I'm Liv Bergen, and that's what I wanted. In fact, I just had one with the Florida book club not just recently that, you know, this beautiful Cuban woman was saying, that's me. That was my life in Cuba before I got here. And I was going, I love that. It appeals to people all over the world. This Liv Bergen character is them. And I don't know how I did that, but I'm very lucky to have everybody own her. And that's what's fun. And there, it's a very different, very strange series. I can't put it in a box other than to say it's probably a gritty, suspenseful thriller.
Yeah, and Liv is definitely one of the characters that has taken a different route to get to the FBI, because like you said, you know, was involved in mining, something that I don't think that a lot of people in the United States really know about. Of course, they only really see mining when people are trapped. They don't really know the day-to-day, the things that go on, the things that have to be involved, and that's something that you are very, very familiar with. So when you devise the character Liv and you put her in the setting that you're very familiar with, into the mining community, how is that community really set? I mean, what is kind of the stereotypes that is not something that you would normally see, and that people, when they read Liv, will kind of get a much better understanding of where she's coming from and how all these things will kind of affect her as she moves along?
I am so glad you asked that question, because it's, you know, when you're a writer, you're supposed to write what you know, and I know mining inside and out. We're a fifth generation family business that's been mining limestone exactly like the Flintstones, and most people never hear about the Flintstones.
I love that. Yabba dabba doo.
Yabba dabba doo. And it is so Flintstone-ish, but it's a very tight community of miners. We're on the surface. There's so much bad press around surface miners, and I'm sure that there are miners out there that don't do a good job at surface mining. I am sure there are people out there when miners are trapped underground that haven't found it the safest way for their employees. But that isn't the norm. They're more like us. We've been in people's neighborhoods for 70 years or 80 years, and they don't even know we're next door. They just see the open space because we've been reclaiming the land, restoring it back to grass a year, right the year after we're done mining that area, and we move on. And we're in a really small space, but you just never know that it's even a mine back there. Well, what's fun about it, John, for me, is our family, before the reclamation laws came into place in 1972, in 1970 we earned an EPA award. We're the only mine that ever has, for our efforts in mining. And that was before the laws came into place. So it's like it's fun to be a part of that family and that lineage and that heritage that says we can mine responsibly and you'll love having us as a neighbor. And for me, that goes deep into my soul. So when I write about it in these mysteries, and right now she's in the FBI, but she's conflicted. She wants to go back to the mining, what she knows, and she's not sure she made the right career choice to leave her family business. And that's what Solomon's Whisper is about, is they're trying to keep her in the FBI, and she's said, I'm putting in my six-month notice, and he's trying to convince her to stay. And the fun part of that is that's our life here. It's such a lifestyle to think 100 years from now that it's really hard to look at a case that might be solved in the next month or the next year. And when you have a mindset of thinking 100 years out and planning for our generation, for instance, in the mining business, is planning 200 years out. And that's what I do every day. I look at 200 years, what is this country going to need? Because I don't want to rely on foreign countries to clean our air and to clean our water. Mm-hmm. And that's what we mine, is limestone to make lime, to clean our air and to clean our water and to clean our sewage. That's what we do. It's Mother Nature's cleanser. So we want to have it, keep it in good hands, and how you keep it from generation to generation to generation. And it's a very valuable profession that most people hate, and that's sad to me. You know, it's like that connection, John, and I don't mean to get on my soapbox, but it's that connection between people who don't like hunters. And we hunt back here in South Dakota. Yes, we hunt back here in South Dakota. But let me explain. We have the poorest county in the country. And a lot of these people hunt because that's the only way they can eat. And they're not proxying it to a grocery store that is getting it from a hog farm. They're actually hunting a buffalo or a deer, and they're harvesting it, and they eat it all year long. It is still the Old West out here in a lot of ways. And it's just different. We just have a different lifestyle, and that's what I'm trying to show with Liv, is that, there's some beautiful things about the mining side of it that people never hear about, and it's a great connected family. We have long-term employees, and it's just fun. It really is. I do feel like I'm every day in the Flintstones. It's just such a fun world.
Well, and that's the great thing that you part up is that, and again, we're speaking with author Sandra Brannon here. You go to sandrabrannon.com, BRANNAN.com, for more information, of course, on Solomon's Whisper, the fifth book in the Liv Bergen series, along with all the other four. But you did bring up a good point is that that's the one thing that I don't think a lot of people understand, like the PETAs and all these other agencies that are out there, and they all like to bitch and moan and complain about things. But you know what they don't wonder, like you said, the air is clean, the water is clean. I don't think they really understand how that stuff gets there. How does those things get on my table? How many people are out in the fields picking vegetables and strawberries and blueberries to put these things on my table? They only look at their own little world, and I think that that's sad. I don't think that they view everybody as human beings. I think they view them as commodities, and I think that that's poor. I think that's why the downfall of society and the world is going on, because we don't view everybody as a human being. We view them as someone who should be doing this, but they don't care as long as it gets done. So I say fuck them all, because that's bullshit. And I think it's wonderful that you bring such a character to light, because it shows that all these people are human. We all have the struggles. Mining is a very, very dangerous profession. trying to get life insurance is probably a very difficult thing to do. And if it is, it's very, very expensive. But it's something that has to be done. And, yes, South Dakota, you have to hunt a deer to eat. I don't care, PETA. I'm not eating fucking squash for the rest of my life. I have to do something else. And so I think that that's very important. And I love the fact that these characters that the authors create, especially yours, are real people. Because they are real people. Because we met you. We know that you're real. We know that Liv Bergen is a real character because she has a little of you wrapped up in you. And so now that you're writing A Solomon's Whisper, and now she's conflicted, it brings more of an emotional aspect to her because now she has something that she is being pulled. And so going on now with the series in the book 6, have you already kind of thought about what's going to happen and how these things are go, or do you just kind of let it kind of organically happen?
I'm so excited about book 6, and I hate to talk about that because I write a book ahead, and I'm a little behind on this one, but it was because this is really strange, and I know it's going to sound so weird, John, but
this whole thing is strange. Listen to me.
Yeah,
now.
I know. It's such a weird series, but the sixth one, there's a drastic ending in Solomon's Whisper, a drastic ending. This is what it's such a strange ending, and I don't want to ruin it, but book 6, when you come off a very strange ending in book 5 that everybody's been waiting for to have, you have to come at it very delicately. And she ends up going back to her hometown in Rapid City, South Dakota, where her family is, and her sister spirits are away to Deadwood. Deadwood, South Dakota, mm-hmm. of course, is fraught with wonderful history from the West and great ghost stories. But why I did that was because I was raised Catholic, and I'm no longer Catholic because I didn't have as strong a faith as I needed to be to stay Catholic, but and that's a different subject altogether. But the priests are asking me to write the story, and one of the priests has already passed away, and another one is going through treatment. And the reason I'm so slow on it is because my interviews with him are interrupted by treatment. But I do this a lot, and I take a real-life situation of, can you imagine being a priest? I mean, what a sucky profession.
No,
everybody either thinks you're a god or you're a villain.
Right.
I mean, there is no in-between. Can you imagine? I mean, I would not
want
to be a priest.
You know what? To sit there on confessional and have to listen and knowing you can't say anything, and I think it would just be so difficult to have to take in everybody's problems, I think that that would be one of the hardest things that I could handle.
Exactly. And you can't say anything about it. I mean, they go to confessional and right. So I kind of
play off.
I mean,
who the hell are they supposed to confess to? You confess to the priest next to you to be like, Jesus Christ, this person. I mean, I don't know if they say Jesus Christ, but it's like, I mean, this person just confessed something to me. I can't say anything, but I have to get something off my chest because that's a lot of stuff to hold on to. To hold on to.
And their vows say they must. So, I wanted to bring in not the religious aspect, but the human aspect of these priests. And of course, I clobber one right off the bat in the book, and you got to do that. You know, you got to knock out a priest. But for me, it's very fun to write their story. In John, I got to tell you, this is so cool. For Lot's return to Sodom, this is when you know you've made it as an author. In Lot's return to Sodom, everybody's written about the Sturgis Rally that knows about it, right? The Sturgis Rally is infamous for their motorcyclists. And this wonderful rally where 500,000 people descend on this 5,000 population town. Well, I wrote it from an FBI's perspective, who was my best friend who was dying of dementia. I pulled it up in the series, but what that whole book is about is, here's what I have to do to protect you 500,000 people from the 5,000 outlaws that are here. And it's the true one percenters, and where the one percenter started was actually the motorcycle gangs, which was before 9/11 was the biggest network in the United States that was of highest danger. And most people don't know that. So the behind the scenes look of Lot's Return to Sodom, that was my biggest selling book that I've had, and it's spread all over the world. But what was interesting about that is the next year, they had their funding cut for Sturgis. And they invited me up to motivate them because I got it. It was the Highway Patrol, the 9/11, the police, the FBI. They invited me up, had a book signing with all of their people, and said, you get it. You get what we do every day. So it's a really cool look behind the scenes to say, yeah, it's a great big party. It's woohoo. It's really fun. Yeah. But these people are wicked. that are behind the scenes that the law people are protecting us from. So I that is my kick. That's what I love to do is go, let me show them your side of the world because nobody knows what you do up here. You know, and that,
yeah.
it's really fun, John. That's for me, that's the dessert for me at the end of the day.
And you know probably why a lot of people don't understand what goes on in South Dakota, because it's September 13th, and you guys already had slipping snow. Okay, that's
nobody,
just not fun.
Nobody wants to visit. Well, here, wherever,
no.
What town you
besides
live in,
Mount
John.
Besides Mount Rushmore, that's about it.
We've got Mount Rushmore and Crazy Horse and the Black Hills and the beautiful
yep.
Lakota Sioux, and we
and
have such a fun
September
state.
September 13th.
And snow on September. We had 4 inches of snow yesterday. I'm like, oh, my
God.
Goodness, this is not good. Oh, this is going to be a long winter, I'm afraid. We still read the Farmer's Almanac, by the way. So.
And they say it's supposed to be just about as bad as last year.
Yeah, and last year was horrible. We lost 40,000 cows that just walked and drowned. They got suffocated and drowned. It was such a bad blizzard in October. So, yeah, this is South Dakota. But we love it. We love it. It makes us hardy folks.
That's true. I mean, we used to live in Minnesota, so we definitely understand the cold and the rugged and the winter. And Shannon and I have always talked about wanting to go to South Dakota because you so graciously invited us to come up so we can kind of see Black Hills, Mount Rushmore, you know, things that I've never been able to see before. I've been through South Dakota, but I never stopped and did that. But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely the open plains and those kinds of things. So the thing is when you – how do you – challenge yourself to get out of your comfort zone then to take live on places that maybe you've never been to, places maybe you want to go to, you know, do you challenge yourself with every book to say, you know what, I'm going to do something that I don't know really much about and I'm just going to go for it and research it and see what I can make of it?
Exactly. And I think if a writer isn't doing that, you're not doing justice to the story. But yes, in fact, the Solomon's Whisper is a beautiful story. It's horrible to say, but it's about children's deaths that never got solved. And it's not about those deaths. It's about somebody is going back and killing the murderer of those children in the exact same fashion that they killed the kid. And that's really the crux of the story. So it's a really fun, for me, I had to do so much research across this country on actual deaths of children that were cold cases or since then have been solved. And I tried to twist it so that it's not embarrassing anybody or using real names. And then I used fake people who killed them and solved it that way. But I had so much fun researching how many kids actually don't, you know, never get vindication. And that is so sad to me. So I take those grains of sand and try to turn it into a pearl, you know, and it that's what I did. I just researched a lot of child cases that I wanted to solve it, even if it's not true. You know,
yeah, and that's a dark place to go.
Yeah, it really is. And
yeah.
It is by far the most popular book I've written so far, which is weird to me because it's a hard subject, but I don't get into the child's death as much as I do somebody's out there doing, you know, you want to cheer on that bad guy, don't you?
Yeah, really. You know, that's a
we're not
toughie.
Supposed to do that.
But,
we're not supposed to cheer on those bad guys, but, you know, somebody's killing those killers that got away with it, you know.
Right.
Anyway.
And I think that's important. I mean, there's nothing wrong. I mean, I don't agree with vigilanteism, but, I mean, like I said, I can understand why some people would go crazy and do certain things. Sometimes I get it. It's not something that I would say you should do, but I guess I can understand the thinking behind the act. And I think that that's the one thing that people have to understand is, you know, there is a certain thinking behind the act, and they're not always just, you know, you can't just label them all, oh, well, they're just crazy. Well, you know what? That doesn't solve anything. You're not doing anything. Oh, they're just crazy, and let's just leave them. Well, you haven't done anything then. You basically said, I don't know and I don't care. Let's just throw them away. It's like, well, you know what? You can actually learn from them. I think you can learn. That's the one thing we need to do is learn.
And the whole point is, in the reason I did the ending the way I did, and that's probably the most talked about part of my any of my novels is the way I ended this. But I get so tired of people judging, John. You know, you judge people who are in that position. It's like, how can you judge? I mean, how can you make a judgment and say, okay, this guy is going to do this or this girl is going to do that? You can't judge. Everybody's going to react differently in those situations. And until you're in that situation, you don't know how you're going to react. And that's what I was trying to say in this book.
Well, you know what? I just was clicking, and again, go to SandraBrandon.com, and I was just clicking on your appearances, and I see that you're going to be at the Military Book Fair November 7th and 8th in San Diego.
Are you going to be there?
Yes. Yeah, they contact us and ask us, so we're going to go down there. Of course, my daughter, her husband is in the military, so she's found out, so we're going to go down. I think Shannon and Abby are actually going to go to the event. I might just go down and do whatever. And, of course, there will be a VoucherCon in Long Beach because that's in our neck of the woods. So we'll see about that. I will say, if anybody from VoucherCon is listening, I've emailed you 7 flipping times about press passes. The last email, I emailed every single person on your website. I've got no response. I don't get it. So if anybody can help me out there to figure out how to get a press pass for VoucherCon, who I need to contact or have them contact me, please email me at editor@suspensemagazine.com and let me know. Because that's all I don't understand that. But I'll tell you what, Sandra, we got about a minute left. And I want you, just like I did with Carly, you got the last minute to kind of say anything and everything that you want to say. So it's all on you. Do it up.
You know, all I can say, John, is you run a fabulous blog talk radio. You have a fabulous magazine. You have a fabulous publishing house. And for writers out there who are wondering where to go, you can't find a better place to be in a publishing house than Suspense Publishing, in my opinion. It's so hard these days to understand how to get through the changing market that it doesn't mean the traditional publishers, which are fabulous, by the way, and have been in place for 200 years, can do any better than Suspense Publishing, who is staying current with the market. And that's changed in the 4 years that I've been here. So that's a word to the writers out there and a word to the fans. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You own Liv Bergen. I'm glad you want to have a beer with her, and I'm glad she keeps you up at night and that you have to keep turning the pages. I am too. I can't wait to see what she does next.
Yeah, that's the fun part. So, hey, Sandra, we want to thank you finally for coming on. You can't be a stranger and do this more. You have to come on more often. And so we want to thank you so much for coming on. Enjoy.
I would love to.
Have fun shoveling your
snow. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. You have a good one.
You too.
So, again, everybody, that is author Sandra Brandon. The latest book is called Solomon's Whisper, the fifth in her Liv Bergen mystery series. Go to SandraBrandon.com for a lot more information to see everything that she's got going on. Also, A.J. Kalushi, latest book, Cedars, is out. You want to make sure that you go check that out. That is, you go to ajkalushi.com, C-O-L-U-C-C-I, for a lot more information. AJ was one author that we had interviewed in the magazine. Also, I believe they did the ITW Reader's Corner, and so you want to check that out. The other author we got going on here is Robert Tannenbaum. His latest book is called Fatal Conceit. You want to make sure that you check that out. That's from Gallery Books. Robert Tannenbaum is a New York Times bestselling author of Tragic, fabulous writer. You can check him out at roberttannenbaum.com, and, of course, they're on Facebook and Twitter. We are going to be back here with our next guest to end the show. Her name is Janice Gable Bashman. It's her first book called Predator. We reviewed it. It's a wonderful book. Janice is also great in the ITW, and she has a lot of things that go on. So we are going to be back and talk with her and see everything that she's got going on. And so I'm going to leave you with this, and you can listen.
Another night slowly closes in, and I feel so lonely. Touching heat freezing on my skin. I pretend you still hold me.
So we want to welcome you back here to the show. We are so happy that we were able to have Carla Negroton and Sandra Brandon. And now we are going to transition here. And this is her first full-length novel, and it is called Predator. And it is by Janice Gable Bashman. We want to thank Janice for coming on to the show. So, Janice, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. So it's a very exciting time. Predator. First full-length novel. You said, you know, you've written nonfiction, you've had a lot of short stories, but now you've thrown yourself here into the thriller suspense world with Predator. So, and I want to remind everybody, too, if you're listening live or if you listen before Tuesday, the book comes out September 16th. And I know a lot of people listen to the show on demand, so probably if you're listening to it after September 16th, go buy the book. There's no excuses. So give us a little bit behind-the-scenes look here at Predator. Your first, like you said, your first full-length novel, kind of putting you right out there.
Yeah, Predator is a book about a girl, a 16-year-old girl named Bree Sunderland, who accompanies her scientist father to Ireland, where he's sent to study bog bodies in the hopes that he can find a way to use that technology of in the way that bog bodies are preserved in the peat to help cure the military soldiers, the injured soldiers, and so she thinks it's just going to be another boring summer vacation, and she goes reluctantly, and she happens upon an immense discovery of her own, one that is changes not only her life, but endangers the world, and along the way she falls in love with a mysterious young Irishman, and there's a lot of mythology involved in the book with the Benedani, who are a mythological group of werewolves that fought against evil. I've put a new twist on that, the idea of the Benedani and that whole thing about how that, you know, who they were and whether they exist now or not. And I've also put a new twist on how werewolves came to be and genetics and all that kind of stuff. So Bree, the book starts off in Ireland in the peat bogs when she discovers a body, basically in the bog, and works its way back to the United States. And so it's, you know, it's fascinating in that, you know, there's a lot of different types of things. You have folklore and you have mythology and you have science and supernatural and genetics and all this different stuff and super soldiers and a bioweapons program and rogue soldiers and all these kinds of people who are, you know, are involved in this story who want to get hold of this technology. She basically has to inject herself with an untested version of her father's gene therapy to become a werewolf in order to stop a corrupt group of mercenaries from creating a team of unstoppable lycanthrope soldiers.
Wow.
Of course, that's not how the book starts out, but that's ultimately, uh-huh, you know, what happens. So there's, you know, the good part of the military who wants to use this for good, and then you have the rogue soldiers who want to use this for something else, and they're all after her, they're all after the technology, they're all after something to fulfill their own desires.
Well, I'll tell you what, nothing like playing it safe with your first novel, huh?
No.
I mean, you got the mythology, the folklore. I mean, I never even heard about that, you know, those werewolves that were in Ireland. That's the first time I'd ever known about it. And so whenever I hear those kinds of things, it's like, oh, I want to know more. I got to know more. Is that,
well, actually, the werewolves weren't initially in Ireland. The mm-hmm. folklore has them living in a different place. The folklore has them living in Lithuania and a couple other places in the world, but I've moved them to Ireland and I've provided an explanation for why they're there. The folklore has them basically in Italy also, but I've also you know, given a reason for, according to history and according to the mythology, the Benedani descended into hell to fight evil. They were the good werewolves, the good people who
okay.
You know, unlike the werewolves that we typically hear about in pop culture and in folklore. And these guys went to fight evil, and they basically saved the crops and the grain from destruction each year so that people could survive and there would be food. I've put a new twist on that. I've moved them to Ireland, I've given a, and I don't want to give it away, but I've given a, an explanation for why they're there. And also in the mythology, they're considered mostly men, and that they've died out during the Inquisition when they were, you know, killed for being witches. I've given them, obviously, they're alive today in my book, and they're mostly women. I should say they're all women. There's a whole twist on that mythology that's new and different than what we would typically read about in the mythology of the, the actual mythology of the story of the Benedani.
Right. Now, is history and mythology something that you are, you know, were you very much interested in when you were younger and then growing up, and this is something that you came upon? Because, like I said, I'd never heard about it. So was that something that you studied and that you just kind of came upon, the Benedani and their history, and then all of a sudden you're like, hey, this is something that I really want to explore more, and then you're putting in your book Predator.
Well, actually, it wasn't. What happened was I wrote a nonfiction book with Jonathan Mayberry called Wanted Undead or Alive, which is all about good versus evil in pop culture and in real life. And so part of what we were basically exploring, all the good guys that fight the bad guys in television and film and in comics and in books and also in real life. So things like, FBI profilers and things like that. So and legendary heroes and mythological heroes. So in writing that book, we wrote about the Benedani. And so that was something that I explored through that process and came to get to know them and thought, hey, these guys are really fascinating. And then Carla Negers, who you had on earlier in the show, and I just told her this the other day, she wasn't even aware of it, but several years ago she started posting pictures from her research trips to Ireland on her Facebook page.
Yep.
And I started looking at them and thinking, that's really fascinating. And I started looking at that, you know, different regions in Ireland, and I discovered that the western coast had a lot of, peat bogs. And then I started discovering bog bodies. And I went, wow, that's really neat how it preserves the flesh. The properties of the bog preserve the flesh so that the, other than being stained from the peat, the body looks just like it did when the person, you know, died, basically. The skin's dried out, and you can see the bones through the flesh, but it's like, pretty cool, but everything else is like still there in terms of when you look at it. So it's pretty fascinating. So I started getting interested in that, and I've always had an interest in science, so I just kind of put all that together to create the book. So I credit Carla somewhat.
And I hope other authors just heard what you said, how important that was. You just were another author. You saw them posting, and her book, you know, was in Ireland, and she has some things on there about Ireland and the cross that she talked about. And you were able to kind of use, if by reading and looking and researching someone else, and you're like, wait a second. And then all of a sudden, bam, there it comes for your book, and then you start doing and you start researching, and all that stuff gets expanded. And I think that's very important. And, of course, being a member of the ITW, you know, you've had so many authors that you've been able to speak with and talk to and get so many things across that, you know, I think that that's a wonderful thing to be able to use within your book. And that's why when you came out here with Predator and when we reviewed it, it was fantastic. I mean, you took the time and the effort and, you know, and the blood and the sweat and the tears to put into this, and it was a great debut novel.
So one of the things that I had to figure out very early on was if there was, you know, hypothetical werewolf DNA, how could people use that to change themselves? And I really just didn't know how to do that. So I contacted, one of the things I did was I got in touch with an American citizen who is working at the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Germany, and he's a world-renowned scientist in the field of human evolution, specifically genetics. And I emailed him, and we chatted and asked him if he would help me. And I said to him, here's what I want to happen to my people. Here's how I want it to go bad. Here's how I need to go good. I need to understand the science of how this would really work. So that because I wanted the book to be, the science in the book to be authentic and to be real, as best as it could be based on the premise, so that I wasn't just making things up. So he helped me work through how that all would work and how to make it work and how to make it go bad and how the different aspects of it and how the science would happen and all that different stuff and how long things would take and stuff. So I've only put as much in the book as the reader needs to know. Obviously, I learned a lot more than I needed to know, but I spoke to him and I spoke to anthropologists and I spoke to a whole bunch of different experts in different fields to find out how to make the science in the book that happens in the book, which is a lot of it is not on the page and some of it is, but to make it so that the reader, it's realistic for the reader. So it took a lot of research, but I had so many people willing to help out that were very excited by the idea of the book and were willing to help. Now, this was a guy who, you know, his field is a very prestigious academic field, and he was just excited by the idea of working on a book with, you know, werewolves and the genetics in it, and he thought that was really cool, so he was more than happy to help. So you kind of, there's a lot of people out there willing to help you out when you need research or help with other things if you just ask and explain what you're doing. And I've been very fortunate that people have been willing to do that for me, because without it, I couldn't have written the book. So
true. And so now my next question kind of is you know, you had all this time to think of your debut novel and to get it out there and to think of your characters and your plot. So why 16-year-old Bree Sunderland? Why is she the one that you decided would be the perfect person to launch your career here now with Predator?
Well, I wasn't thinking of it in terms of, you know, launching my career with a book and who's the protagonist going to be. It was more, I had the story idea, and the protagonist happened to be a 16-year-old girl who goes to Ireland with her father. And therefore, the book, you know, became about her. That's just the way it happened. Like, the book I just finished writing after this one is for middle schoolers, and it's about two boys. They just came to me. That's just who it is. And the book I'm writing next is another young adult book, and I have another girl who's the protagonist. And in that book, Charlie just came to me, and that's just who the story's about. I didn't set out to make the book about Bree. The book just happened to be about Bree and her discovery and what happens to her throughout this whole process.
Gotcha. See, and that's something that also is very interesting, because it's more of a, you can say, of course, it's a character-driven book, but it was the plot that kind of drove you into the story.
Right, right. And then there's other characters, like her boyfriend Liam. Initially, when I wrote the book, he was more of a behind-the-scenes kind of guy in my first drafts. He was her boyfriend, but he was there when she was not at work, and she was not making all these fantastic discoveries or scary discoveries and other things that are happening to her. And I realized down the road that I needed to pull him in more. So he, instead of having him as just the boyfriend, he now became another kid who was spending the summer with his dad. He's actually an Irish kid, but he's spending the summer with his dad working on the same dig, because his father was working on the dig also. And so now he's there for everything that happens to her on the digs, as well as in the lab, as well as out in the field when things are happening, the scary things are happening, the people are after them and everything else. He's part of the whole story. So she now has him along for the ride with her. And so there's places for the romance to bloom in fear and in quiet moments and in discovery moments as well, and not just, you know, off the scene, so to speak, you know, when they're just hanging out at night kind of thing. So that was a conscious decision to do that later on, and I think it made the book much stronger than it was initially. But that I did think about and change, which required some substantial changes, but it was significant to do, and it was important to do, and it really made a big difference.
And again, we're speaking here with Janice Bashman, and it's JaniceGableBashman.com. For more information, go to her website. And the book, again, is called Predator, the first, her debut novel here. And that's the one thing that I like to know. You know, the book comes out September 16th, again, Tuesday, for anyone who's listening live. The book comes out September 16th. And so you're kind of ramping up now. So when the book hits, then you're going to have to do a lot of press, a lot of things. How has this journey been for you, and how is it going to kind of move forward? Is it something that you're anticipating, excited to go out there and talk to all these different people? Or like some authors, they're like, you know, I'm a little nervous. I mean, it's like I like to sit and type, but it's very difficult to kind of go out and talk.
Well, I like to interact with people. I'm a quiet person, like, in terms of with my groups of friends and stuff. I have, you know, my groups of friends personally and stuff. But when it comes to my writing and talking to people about that and interacting on social media and Facebook and Twitter, I love to interact with other writers. I love to interact with other readers. I love to interact with just people who are interested in talking to me. I have quite a bit of followers on Facebook and on Twitter. And I love to just, you know, talk to people, because to me, I can't write in a vacuum. I can't live in a vacuum. I get inspiration from other people. And I also enjoy helping people. I've had people who, you know, email me and say, hey, what do you think about this? Or what about this that I'm writing? You know, I won't read their work, so to speak, but they may have a question or may have a, how do I get this published or how do I find an agent or how do I do this? Or just even, you know, hi, I read something of yours and I really liked it. And just, or whatever it might be, I enjoy interacting with people through social media. So for me, that's not an issue. I have a blog tour that's coming up that starts on Monday for a couple weeks. So I'll be on a different blog every single day for over 2 weeks, and I'm doing a whole bunch of different things. I speak at a lot of different conferences, writing conferences and workshops, and I also teach this semester. Actually, for the first time, I'm teaching a college course on writing. So I'm used to
speaking to people.
Yeah, so I'm used to speaking to people when it comes to my professional life. And I enjoy it. I really do like the interaction. It gets me motivated and inspires me. Even just seeing other things that people are doing and how great they're, you know, what's going on in their lives personally or professionally, it just you know, it gets me excited about things. So I like to have that interaction. So to answer your question, I'm looking forward to it all, and we'll see what happens. It should be fun, though.
Yeah. And, you know, and with the fabulous reviews that you've already gotten back on the book, it has to make it feel a little easier now that when the public is able to get a hold of it here on September 16th, and like we've talked before, like when I talked with Carla, that with social media so quick, you're able to then go actually on September 17th, and you can start seeing Facebook pages, people talking about it, people maybe emailing you, questioning you. It's got to make that a little bit easier transition knowing, hey, I've got these wonderful reviews back. So you're maybe not so scared that when the public finally gets it, you know, that, you know, what they're going to say and what they're going to think.
Right. And that's true. It does help to ease some of that fear about that. But again, it's, you know, you hope people enjoy it. You do your best. You write the best book that you possibly can. At least I do. I pour my heart out into my book, and I hope that you know, it's something that people will enjoy. Beyond that, I can't control how people react. I hope they love it. But, you know, that's up to them, certainly. And we'll see. Wait and see what happens. But, yes, so far I've gotten great reviews, which I'm very thankful for and very grateful for, and which is wonderful. It does make it easier. So.
And, you know, of course, you know, you mentioned Leelam that's in the book, along with Bree and her father. But was there one other kind of character that kind of jumped out, maybe surprised you as someone that had a bigger voice than you thought that they were going to have, and you were kind of like, wow, I had no idea this character was going to be, you know, so predominant in my book, kind of scared you, or not really scared you, kind of surprised you?
Well, the Benadani are a character in the book, and I don't want to go into too much detail about them, but they're very important in terms of, you know, why they need to stop this research from getting out into the wrong hands. And if I say anything more, it'll give away too much. But they're very big characters in the book, and there's a group of them. And it's, you'll be surprised to learn what that reason is. But I also have a character in there, General Mayberry, who I named after Jonathan Mayberry, obviously, who I co-wrote my other book with. He's been a mentor of mine for years and a great, great and wonderful friend. And so I decided to honor him with that character. But General Mayberry is in charge of this research that the military wants to use. But he ended up having a much bigger role in the revisions than I anticipated in terms of things that were happening with his son and what that all meant in terms of why this research was so important. And again, if I give it away, I'll give away the book. But there's a big emotional attachment to that, to the research and what it means to him and his family that originally was not there. So that came as a surprise to me in revisions. But again, I felt it made the book much stronger. So I was very happy to put it in.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, that when you're looking at the emotional aspect, I think a lot of the things that debut authors don't really get is they know they have to build their character up, and then they know that they try to get their plot moving, you know, really fast, and they're doing a thriller or suspense or however they're kind of doing it, but they kind of forget about the emotional aspect that their characters, you know, are real, and they got to kind of make them real. They have to have emotions. They have to have, you know, ups and downs and things like that. How conscious of those types of things were you when you were writing the characters to make sure that they had those ups and downs, those emotional roller coasters that go on with everybody, so readers, when they read, would, you know, have a better understanding and be able to get into them more?
I think you have to be very aware of those things, and I was more so in second, third, fourth drafts versus the first draft, which was just getting the story down. Once that first draft was finished, I had to go back in and really put those things in and make sure they were there throughout the book. But, for example, Bree, the main character, her brother has died not too long before the book starts, and her mother died, a while before that. So it's just her and her dad, and her dad's been distant and just focused on his work. And so the reason she goes to Ireland with him is she's trying to get, reconnect with him and see what can happen because she's desperate at this point. But she's also into science, and she's smart and intuitive, and she's curious. But she's also like a typical teen who falls in love and experiences all the emotions that go along with that. So, and she's caring and kind. So you get all that in the different aspects of what she's like. But I had to layer those things in as I was doing revisions so that they became prevalent. But you had to see why these things were so important to her, why it's so important that she went to Ireland with her dad, and why it's so important that she solve this mystery about this body and what comes after it, and why it's so important to her that she stands up for her beliefs no matter what the consequences are, and that she fights for what, she needs to do, not only for her to survive, but for everybody else around her in the world and to save those that she loves. All that has to be built in and layered in. So you have to consciously think about that, and it has to make sense as well. So it takes time and several drafts to get there, for me anyway. I can't do it all in one shot. So I did think about it. I didn't,
Yeah, it's a toughie. I mean, to try to sit back and get all that stuff done kind of in one, I mean, you always have to kind of go back and read. And you have to have the connection with the character. You got to kind of put yourself in situations and figure those things out. And sometimes that's difficult for an author to do also because some scenes are dark and some scenes are uncomfortable. And how did you handle that aspect when you had to put yourself into situations that, of course, you yourself probably will never be involved in, but you kind of had to get the emotional part of it right.
Right, and it's hard sometimes. You really have to go there, and sometimes as authors we don't want to do that, but you got to get in the mindset. I find myself sometimes avoiding those chapters and coming back to them because I just don't feel like going there on a particular day, and so I'll just leave it, and then when I'm ready to deal with it, I'll hit there because it does bring you into a different place in your head. But if you don't do it, it's not going to be authentic for the reader, if you don't get to those true emotions. And the reader's not going to get the same thing out of the book. They're not going to enjoy it. I loved when my agent said to me when she got back my next book, she actually tweeted about it, that I made her cry. And it's hard to read through crying. It was an ultimate compliment to me because the part that she was reading, what she was reading, I'm sure the section of it was meant to do that. And so... to me, that means I did my job and I did it well. And hopefully, in those parts that readers will care enough about the people that, and things that are happening to them to feel that way. And in the other parts where things are happy and exciting, they'll feel that way as well. You try hard to do that and you do your best and hopefully it comes across for the reader.
Yeah, that's the one thing I always try to tell authors. I'm like, even if you write a character and you get an email and someone writes you and says, I hate that character. I cannot believe, I wish you just would have killed him off. Or I was so happy when you finally did. I couldn't stand him. You should be like, yeah, I did my job. I made you an emotional aspect of a character, whether you liked him or not. Because you just never wanted to write a character that they're like, now who was that again? Because then it's forgettable. You want to love or hate, then you did your job.
Yeah, you have to have your character has to be three-dimensional. We all have good and bad aspects to us, and I'm just saying it in black and white terms right now. But we all have different degrees of all of that and everything that's in between, and we're not always happy, we're not always sad, we're not always good, we're not always bad, but we all have different things that we go through on a daily basis, and your characters have to be like that too. They can't be just flat characters, or the readers just won't relate to them because we're human beings and we only can relate to other people that are like ourselves. So it's important to do that and to give your readers, even if you the famous saying among writers is if you have a serial killer, give them a dog to like because it makes them human, and then readers can relate to the dog. And so even though he's this horrific
just
person...
Just don't kill the dog with the killer.
Right, just don't kill the dog, exactly. But it makes the person human to the reader, and they can relate somewhat, just enough to a little bit to want to understand that character, even if they're doing evil things. So if it was just like this evil, horrible thing, we really just wouldn't care about it. But when you make it you want to understand why is this, this person has a soft side that's really bizarre. Now I want to learn a little bit more, and I want to try to relate somehow. So, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to say, we got about a minute left, and like I always like to give the guests, I like to make sure that you guys have, you know, kind of the last words and whatever, you know, you want to say and whatever's going on. So, you know, here it is. You got the minute left. You can kind of say whatever it is, you know, tell people about your appearances or whatever we might not have touched on, and I will leave it open to you.
Okay, well, if you go to my website, as he said, janicegablebashman.com, if you're listening to this before Tuesday and you want a signed copy of the book, you can pre-order through the Doylestown Bookshop. They will ship for free to anywhere in the United States, and I'll sign the book and personalize it to you. And then if you're on Facebook, on Wednesday, September 17th from 4 to 9 p.m., I will be having my online launch party for Predator, and I have I have a couple of big New York Times bestsellers coming on. I have Carla Nagers and Hank Felipe Ryan, and I have J.T. Ellison, and I have a whole bunch of giveaways as well. And
wow.
I have, you know, K.M. Walton is also coming on. She's a young adult author. So right now I have four authors, potentially for a fifth. I'm still working with somebody on that. And there's a bunch of prizes and things like that. So if you can drop by, you don't have to be there for the whole time, but you got to go. Just put in the search engine Janice Gable Bashman Launch, and it should come up, and then click going so you can join and see what's going on. And people can do that. So that would be great if people want to join us, and that would be wonderful. And then there's a bunch of conferences and stuff throughout the next year. On my website, there's an appearances page on my website, but I have about seven or eight things coming up in the next, you know, few months, as well as well into the spring. I'll be at several conferences in the spring and things like that. So,
cool.
Yeah, it'd be great if people could join me, and I hope everybody enjoys the book. And I do appreciate all Suspense has done for myself and for other writers. And I think it's fantastic magazine as well as a radio show, and you guys are great. And I do want to say
thank you. Oh, well, we want to say thank you, too. And you know what? It's weird. I mean, that's exciting stuff. I've never really quite heard a launch party where you're going to have all those gift authors, so I think that that's fascinating. And you know what? We want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been fascinating. Can't wait to see what you got coming up next. And again, thanks for being a guest and sharing everything with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So again, everybody, that is Janice Gable Bashman. Go to janicegablebashman.com for more information. And remember, the book is called Predator. It comes out on September the 16th. So if you're listening right now, you have to wait till Tuesday. If you're listening on Tuesday, you can get it. So there's no excuse. We want to thank everyone for coming on and joining us here on the show today, especially, of course, all the guests and, of course, all the listeners. We had Carla Nagers on. We had Sandra Brandon on. And, of course, we just had Janice Bashman on. So, everybody, we can't thank you enough for all the support and everything that you do for us. You just got to check out the website for the schedule and see what we got coming on. The next magazine shall be out probably this weekend, maybe Monday at the latest. Got some fabulous authors in there, including Dennis Lehan, an exclusive interview with him. So check all that out. We will talk to you all later. Good, everybody. Thank you all for all the support, and goodbye.